facto forum. My name is Jason Beliquit, and I am on the ACTO board and work with the education committee. And my colleague Laurel, who is experiencing a couple of slight technical difficulties, is actually working today. And so hopefully she'll be able to jump back on here in a moment or two. We're experiencing some, I'm going to call them anomalies with Zoom. Let's say that there's some interesting things happening with all the ones and zeros. And so welcome. It's good to see all of you, some familiar faces and some new ones. And as we are waiting for Laurel to hop back on, hopefully, just a couple of announcements. One is we have a conference coming, ACTO conference coming in June. And it's going to be pretty wonderful. And so in May, the ACTO Forum is actually a preview, and we'll have three of the speakers that will be sharing and kind of giving you a taste of what is to come at the conference. And so if you haven't signed up yet, go to the ACTO website, check out what's going on. It's going to be really great. Joni, you have any other tidbits you want to share about the conference, or?
Well, you know, in addition to the preview in May, I mean, the conference is shaping up to be absolutely amazing, and we're just really excited about the depth and the breadth of the speakers. I mean, it's so there's so much richness to what's available, and I would recommend, if you can do it, to join us, because it's the work on diversity and inclusion and looking at what, trying to get answers for what you have questions about in terms of coach training and how to make it all inclusive. And you know, that's, to me, yeah, I'm going because I have to go because I'm going to be president. But aside from that, this is a chance, to me, it's a chance to learn, to find out what I don't know, because I don't know what I don't know. And that's what I love about ACTO, is I keep learning. So that's my pitch, because I just love ACTO, even if I wasn't going to go.
And thank you. And Hallie's on the call. We're just giving a couple of announcements. Welcome. Do you have any, a couple sentences you'd like to say about the conference?
I do. And without knowing what Jody just said, I just think that it's to me, this topic of diversity, inclusion, and equity is not, it's timely, obviously, particularly in the United States. We got a lot going on, and I don't see it as we need to fix the coaching profession. I see it as a huge opportunity for coaches to lead the healing that needs to happen on the planet. It's right in alignment with what we do. And so my passion and my goal is to have coaches know how to lead those conversations. So that's what this conference is about, is giving people the tools and the conversations so that they can.
Thanks, Hallie. Hey, Laurel, you're back.
I'm back. Zoom is still frozen on my end. If you could start the recording, I can end it.
Okay.
By logging out at the end. But that, for some reason, it's...
It looks like you actually are the host now and have to give me permission to record it.
That's the issue. It will not let me do it. It won't let me click on anything. It's completely frozen on my end.
That's all right. We're experiencing some interesting things with Zoom today.
Yeah.
So that's all right. Laurel, would you like to just start us off here?
Sure. I do think if you can log in, then you might be able to start it that way.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So welcome, everybody. I'm Laurel. I'm going to be the host again today, just facilitating a really wonderful conversation around coach training and generation. So just like last month, we've put together a panel for you today. This month, we're going to be covering a topic that's growing in importance and in our awareness around generational differences and how we can best support generational differences in the light of the training that we do. So before we begin, just want to cover some logistics. We're going to, if for those of you that joined us last time, we're going to do the same process. We're going to break the class up into two sections. So one is part one, our panelists are going to be featured. So we're going to ask that you turn off your video just so that we can see our panelists. And from there, I'm going to facilitate a conversation.
And if we could have people mute, I think Nancy Smythe is making a lot of noise. Inadvertently. just everybody mute their microphones if they're not talking.
Thank you. Yes, and then part two, we're going to ask everyone to turn their videos back on if you want to, and then we'll transition into open Q&A. You can ask any questions that you want. All right, so let's go ahead and dive in. If you haven't already turned off your video, please do so and mute, unless in the second half, then that will be open discussion. And I just wanted to start off by introducing each of the panelists. So today we have with us Bryce Bauer. Bryce spent 5 years of his coaching career traveling the world to work for wilderness therapy programs in Utah, New Mexico, Hawaii, and Australia before moving into private coaching. He's now in Salt Lake City. He's a huge believer in the power of outdoors travel and going big. Bryce holds a PCC with the ICF and is a certified ARISE interventionist. He primarily has worked with motivated millennial men who are seeking greater purpose, love, and joy in their life, and has recently branched out to also support couples coaching with his wife, Jenny. He's also a co-instructor with us at the Institute for Integrative Coach Training. Welcome, Bryce. And we also have Bhavana Issar. Did I pronounce that correctly? Bhavana?
Hi, the name is pronounced Bhavna. I write a book, so I'm sorry about the phonetics.
No problem. I just want to make sure I got it right. All right, and she's the founder and CEO of a business consulting firm, Sambhavana. Did I get that correct?
It's Sambhavna.
Okay, you say it much more beautifully. And a social venture caregiver. Areas of interest include change, transition, innovation, creative expression, group dynamics, transpersonal psychology, somatics, and yoga. She's currently based in Mumbai with her husband, daughter, and dog, and enjoys traveling. Thank you for being here. We're excited to have you. And next we have Jody Sleeper Triplett. Jody's an MCC coach, trainer, mentor, coach, keynote speaker. She's the author of Empowering Youth with ADHD and contributing author of Becoming Self-Determined, Creating Thoughtful Learners in a Standards-Driven, Admissions-Frenzied Culture. Her company, Her company, JST Coaching and Training, provides students and ADHD coach training programs to individuals and institutions. She is seen by many as the foremost authority in the field of student and ADHD coaching. As president-elect of ACTO, Jody's forging a platform of diversity, equality, inclusion, and excellence in coach training. Welcome, Jody. And Renee Dornborough is with us. Renee is leading a worldwide movement to empower kids through life coaching. Her company's Wisdom Coach certification program is helping professionals in over 30 countries use fun coaching stories and activities to bring personal development and life coaching to children ages 6 to 12. Renee is a personal development expert, member of the ICF, and former three-year board member of ACTO. She and her husband of 20 years are proud parents of 17-year-old twins, a son and daughter. Welcome, Renee.
Thanks.
All right, so let's go ahead and dive into these questions. All right, the first question we have on the table for you is, what do you recommend other coach trainers know or understand about the population that you focus on in your training?
Are you going to call on somebody, or how do you want this to work?
Popcorn style.
Okay. Well, I don't mind starting. So, you know, we focus on children between the ages of 6 through 12, and, you know, that is our niche. So we tend to attract people who are used to working with kids, who have experience working with kids. So, you know, as far as helping them understand, I think for most of our people that we attract, when we attract someone from, like, the ICF community, one of the first things that we share with them, and one of the first things I share with people in ICF chapters when I do talks for the chapters, is that coaching kids is different than coaching adults. And the reason for that is brain development. You know, with adults, they have the frontal lobes of their brain are fully developed. So they have the critical reasoning skills, and they have greater life experience from which to draw upon. It's one of the reasons why powerful questions are such strong tools for us to use in coaching in order to build awareness. But with young kids, they don't have the frontal lobes aren't fully developed. They don't have all those critical reasoning skills, not as much depth of experience. So what we do in our focuses is help lay a foundation of knowledge through our coaching stories. So there's a little bit of a teaching component. And then once we kind of help lay this foundation of knowledge, then we can use our powerful questioning to support the children in applying that knowledge to their own lives. So building that awareness, and from there they can decide how they want to take action, whether it's shifting in their thinking, taking different actions, that sort of things. We tend to attract from three different areas. One is someone who's already a trained coach. Another one is another category of people from the education environment, and then also like therapists, counselors, that kind of thing. So that's kind of where we are, and we're working with, you know, younger kids between the ages of 6 through 12, so elementary school, early middle school.
Thank you. I just wanted to jump in and say, if somebody's on their phone, if you could please mute, we've got some background noise going on.
You can mute by pressing *6 on your phone.
Oh, there we go. Thank you.
Yeah.
And the person on the phone cannot see our chat.
Correct.
As Joey pointed out.
Right. So, I just want to quickly piggyback onto what Renee said, because our training, in terms of the focus of the training, is ages 8 through to adults. And it really is about understanding the neurobiology and the behavior. Mm-hmm. That what we, years ago, I started doing this when people didn't believe that you could coach kids. It's like, yeah. Well, children aren't creative, resourceful, and whole. And I said, you've got to be kidding me. Of course they are. So at the same time, though, those who come into this work really have to want to learn those intricacies to make the coaching work effectively. Yeah. And Renee and I have swapped trainees over time because of our common bond in this area. So I want to... That's why I just wanted to add that.
Great, thank you. Yeah, and I have 4 kids, so I can say that they soak up the coaching more than they do the advice giving. Great.
Yeah, and I can jump in here. So I primarily work with millennials, and I'm also a millennial myself, so I feel like I can speak on this topic. Yeah, and the first thing is a lot of people don't know how old millennials really are. So the Pew Research Center defines millennials as being born between 1982 and 1996. So today people are 23 to even 37. And I don't know how they're defining the next generation coming up, but these are people that are getting married much later, having kids much later, are wanting to work from home more, are... Just now, I think technology is, this is something that for me came up in high school, iPhones, Facebook. So there's a lot more anxiety and depression, I think, in the millennial generation. And I think some of that has to do with social media and then social pressure. And so millennials are really breaking the mold in a lot of ways, wanting to work less, do more self-care, and I noticed at least from some of the other older generations that millennials feel like they're sometimes labeled as lazy because they want to do things a little bit differently. But I think that a lot of times people in their 20s and 30s now are just trying to do things a little bit differently. So I know that for me, I really want to meet them where they are. If they're not trying to do a traditional relationship, have a traditional job, it's a lot harder for one person to go out and make it on their own. So people are I think the average age that people are moving out now is 26 from their parents' house, which is, I think that brings up a lot of shame for people that aren't able to make it even after they get a bachelor's degree. So yeah, I think there's a huge need for coaching in the millennial generation. And yeah, and I notice a lot of times parents end up paying me. It's actually not, they don't have the money to pay for coaching. So yeah, I see there's a huge need there. And yeah, so it's a really interesting generation to work with, and being inside of it, I feel like I can see more of what's going on, even though I've been able to go out and do things on my own. So yeah, sorry, I kind of got something in my throat, but so yeah, I'm open to any questions about what it's like to work with millennials, being one myself as well.
Hi, I'd like to talk about the generations that we work with. Most of my work is with the traditional corporate world or the not-for-profit, and therefore most of it tends to be with the generation that is in their late 30s to early 50s, what could that generation be called? I'm not too sure. That's not a lens that we use very actively to categorize a bunch of people. Most of our work is also with women around that age who are looking to find their voice. So there's a certain nuance of gender as well. Thanks to my social venture, which requires coaching and counseling as well, the caregivers tend to pan a lot of generations, but are mostly on the older side, so mostly on the baby boomer side, maybe. That's the span or spectrum that we cover. Very intrigued by the coaching that is done for children and millennials, of course. I don't have much of an experience in that area. But as a parent and as somebody who hires millennials, I would definitely be very interested.
Great, thank you all. And what would you say from a coach training perspective is the best way to become generationally aware and supportive? And again, just open question.
For me, it's about trying to stay abreast of all the changes, and I think of technology first. As a baby boomer, I don't necessarily jump to, well, we want to have videos versus books. Everything in our training has shifted dramatically, I'd say within even the last 5 years, because when we have the younger generations, they're not as interested they're being very honest, but they'd rather watch videos than read the books. Or could you give me an article or a synopsis of that? Because they're going at lightning speed. So that's part of what I believe as a trainer, that we need to be able to do that, to understand that there are differences, so that there's diversity within our training materials. There are those that want to read books, those that don't. So many reasons to look up learning platforms. I never used one before, and someone who trains with us said, one of our trainers says, well, everybody uses the learning platform. I said, well, would you tell me what that is, and we'll do it. So that's where I see the biggest piece is asking and listening to what different generations want and need in order to learn the best.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And another thing that I think is important, and I'm thinking, you know, I'm taking this outside of just what we do. I'm just kind of thinking in general about the it's kind of the diversity question about learning about whether it's generations or personality styles or cultures or whatever it is that when we understand more about these different components that make us all human, it helps us understand more about the filters that people experience their lives with. And that also helps us help them identify or blind spots that they might have in their lives just because of their generation. You know, I first kind of learned about the whole generation about 6 years ago. In fact, I dug up my book here to refresh my memory. And I remember I was fascinated to read through and say, oh, yeah, well, that's why my parents are the way they are. And, oh, yeah, that's definitely me. And just to kind of look at the general trends of how generations evolve. And one of the reasons why, you know, the millennials tend to behave in a little different format than, you know, me. And my children who are 17, you know, just seeing them and everything they're exposed to and what's going on in the world and how that influences them as well. I just think it helps us understand the filters that our clients, no matter what their age are experiencing the world with, so that we can help them identify blind spots and opportunities and, you know, whether it's generations, cultures, gender, that's a big one, especially with little girls, little boys as well. That's kind of what popped into my mind about this question.
And to piggyback off both of those, yeah, I think asking questions is huge for any generation. And we're all in the same world where things are happening, changing at lightning speed now. So, I mean, the biggest question I ask people is, like, what is it like to be you? What was it like growing up? Mm-hmm. There's always going to be a rub, I think, with parents raising children in the next generation, especially now. So, yeah, so I usually like to ask about what it was like to be raised by this other generation. My parents were more traditional. Mom was a caregiver. My dad was the worker. Now me and my wife work together. We're going to share childcare duties when we have a child soon. I mean, it's just going to be much different. But I did grow up thinking that I had to be the breadwinner, had to do things a certain way, maybe take over the family business. Asking questions, I think that's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
So I'll jump in now, as for my experience or, you know, working with the range of people that we do, two elements are absolutely critical. One is the quality of self-awareness or the perspective or worldview that the coachee has. The perspective or the worldview that a coachee has is a function of the growing up circumstances, both within the family and in the social context.
Right.
So for example, generation that grew up just after India got independence or, you know, after the partition of the subcontinent has a certain impact in terms of how they look at their lives, what they need to strive for, what is scarcity, technology, etc. What is the role of family? And that impacts their view of themselves, the world, and how they learn. Now, if I were to take the same card for a younger generation, maybe 15, 20 years later, their experience of the social context impacted by technology, impacted by political environment, impacted by social growth is very different. And if I look at the millennials or some younger lot, I find them living in the idea of abundance far more than, for example, that bunch of the older generations that came from the view of scarcity or poverty or, the hierarchy in the mind. Whereas the younger lot don't have those frames at all. And that influences the way they look at themselves, the way they look at how I can learn, who I can learn from, and therefore, it nuances the kind of coaching that one has to offer to that particular generation.
Thank you.
I would just add to that that when you think about what you just said, Bhavna, it's so important that the people that we train who are very different, they see the world the way they see it. For them to understand that, so that when they've, it's great to say I've been trained, I've been certified, I'm a coach, but when you sit down with your clients, asking those questions, as you said, Bryce, what is it that you want me to know about you? How can I better understand you to be the best coach for you? And that's something I believe we need to continue to go even deeper with our trainees to make sure they're getting out there and doing that.
Great, thank you. And some of this might have already been answered, but any ideas around honoring generational differences from a coach training perspective? So I know we've covered technology and, you know, really speaking to the person. Anything else around the differences?
I'll come in again. And if I look at the lens of gender, and if I look at women across generations, I think there is a big difference in how women look at their bodies and how women understand express through their bodies as well. So for example, I can see the transition even in myself in my growing up years versus what is okay today in the urban society that I live in. Whereas how women understand clothing, how express themselves and meet it, how they dress up for occasions and the body image that they carry impacts the quality of intuition, impacts the quality of receiving, and therefore the quality of their learning as well. So here I would look at the intersection of gender and somatics, for example.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Thank you. All right, and the last question is, what has surprised you most about keeping generation in mind as you train coaches?
For me, the surprise is always realizing how much I don't know, which is actually delightful, because that's how we learn and grow as human beings. But when I think about in training from someone who has had, in terms of their educational level, their ability to grasp certain information, what that person needs and what they expect is based on generation. In terms of say college students today, their level of demands of, you know, my parents are paying this amount of money, I should be getting this from the university, you need to make sure I pass, that type of thing. And I see that as a coach from a lot of clients. But as a trainer, it varies of this is too much work to bring it on, I want more. So trying to figure out not only individually, but generationally and from one's upbringing, how do you manage that as a trainer when you have a room full of people who are kind of all over the map? It's, as I said, it can be delightful, but it's also a little daunting sometimes to figure out how do you match it all.
Yeah, for me, when I'm thinking back in time when I first started this, for me, in talking with about the kids first, it's just really how fast kids get it. You know, they don't have years and years of, you know, limiting beliefs and other things built up. Yes, they do have some, but they can learn these concepts so quickly and shift so quickly. And when it came to working with my people, and just, you know, my company's a little different than a lot of people on the panel in that we have a coaching specialty. So people are already coaches or educators or counselors and therapists. So what they're doing is they're getting certified in my curriculum to use our coaching stories activities to work with kids. So I'm not actually training them in how to be a coach. So my level of interaction is a little bit different from most of the people on the panel. That being said, it is, you know, supporting them in seeing the evidence of how fast this can work with children. You know, we do that with the different case studies and examples and scenarios, those kinds of things. But I think that really is, you know, whenever I do a case study from one of our people and I read the what they've done with a child who's 5 or 6 years old, and sometimes children bring home what they're learning to their families and start like the coaching within their own families, it just blows me away. And I'm just so, you know, honored to be working with this age group. And I think that was probably my biggest surprise, just how much they get it and how fast they get it as well.
Yeah, and for me, working at IACT, where there's a whole range of ages and generations, and even though we're talking about generational differences, I think there are way more similarities. So mm-hmm. just the human experience, I think speaking to that is the best way to really connect everyone. Because, yeah, I think as far as emotions go and struggles and what we want, it's usually pretty similar. And so, yeah, I mean, I try to tap into that when I'm working with clients or training coaches and how to open them up to learn how to do that with their clients as well. Because I think that's how we really connect. We can talk about philosophies and concepts all day, but really, people want to feel trust, they want to feel love and care, and then mm-hmm. they'll open up and really get to the good stuff.
Yeah, I think Bryce hit the nail on the head. You know, coaching is coaching. It's where are they now? Where do they want to be? Whether it's a child who's wanting more friends and to feel have the courage to ask kids to play on the playground, or, you know, someone, a teen who's getting the courage up to go for the first job, or, you know, the millennials who get the courage up to start own business or whatever. Empty nesters getting the courage to start their own business as well. Just whatever it is, it's where you are, where you want to be, and then how do we support them in getting there and from where they are. I think you hit the nail on the head, Bryce. More similarities than differences.
I'd echo a lot of what has been said, and just to build on it further, for me, it's a strange thing. It's a little bit of a validation as much as a surprise, which is that the more we work with emotions, actually those that are called traditionally the negative emotions, you know, whether it is anger, shame, guilt, sadness, there is more potential to explore possibilities of who you can become, because it is beneath these emotions that lies the possibility of a new configuration or a new way of being, etc. So, you know, it's a little bit about how surprisingly these feelings are denied, but actually they are the bedrock or the seat of new possibilities and potential. So it's always a pleasant surprise, but it is a surprise.
Wonderful, thank you. Anything else before we transition to the second half? All right, so everyone who has gone off video, you can go ahead and turn your video back on if you wish. And please do continue to stay on mute unless you have a question. So I wanted to open it up to questions, but also any insights or experiences from anyone else in the group that's joined us today. And again, popcorn style, so feel free to jump in.
Hi, Fran here.
Hi, Fran.
Hi, I'll dive in. So I was listening for a while with my trainer, but mostly mentor ears on, mentor of coaches. And there's a challenge for the clients that I mentor to discern. So they're going for their accreditation, right? And so they're preparing to submit their recordings for their assessment, for their performance evaluation. And I've found a very clear distinction. This is what brings up the diversity. They're working with a whole variety of clients in terms of, even if they're dealing with the same field, like they're all executives, that's their target market, or whatever their specialty is, there's still a variety of, with the clients, a variety of personalities, learning styles, and so there's this challenge with, how do I hyper-focus on, let me put it this way, I've said it this way many times, there's a distinction between demonstrating your competency of the ICF, you know, your competencies, your ICF, there's a difference with the purpose of the mentoring is to demonstrate your competency of the skills. But when you go to any individual client conversation, you're going to be meeting that person where they are. And that's where the diversity shows up, you know, in their learning style, or, you know, their age, their generation, their whatever. Well, for example, I was training case managers working with the homeless. Well, their issues are so overwhelming, you know, that they would spend a tremendous amount of time just creating safety, trust and safety. And so working with a homeless client to demonstrate their skills of all their competency. Anyway, I think I've made my point. So the distinction, bottom line, the distinction between applying for your accreditation and having a day-to-day coaching conversation with a client. And I find myself saying, how many times do I hang up the phone or turn off the Zoom and say to myself, man, I'm glad that wasn't an exam conversation.
Yeah. That's funny.
Because of the diversity and meeting the client where they are.
Thank you.
Hi, Fran. Cool question. And I'll use it as an opportunity to get my passion piece in here about the importance of having coaches trained in the language of including everybody in their conversations. Because I, you know, and I'm actively, what is the word, lobbying with the ICF to put some language into the core competencies, to your point about going for a credential, that there be language in the core competencies about a coach's ability to, as you say, meet clients where they are and actually initiate conversations which would have them bring forward issues of that they're encountering in their life. And that was my question for the panel was, you know, how do you deal with a six-year-old that's dealing with bullying because of identity issues, let's say race or different country of origin, or, you know, I heard a number of people talk about girls and boys, but what about somebody who believes they're transgender or non-binary? And so having us as coaches be versed in that language would be wonderful, and having us
go for it.
Assess that way. Yeah, working on it. So
these competencies are woefully out of date. We wrote these 25 years ago. Come on.
Yeah. Well, the ICF has indicated in an audience that I don't know who's here, I will say that the ICF has indicated that they are interested in adding language for this. So, yeah.
Thank you.
And I'd like to add that one of the key things, and this is in the core competency someplace, that coming from your curiosity. So if you're coming from your curiosity, you're coming from curiosity across the age span, across the diversity span. And if you can come from that and withholding is any judgment, and then I think that finds that you can coach more easily people from a whole variety of experiences. The other thing is that I think the core competencies were written for a group of people that had a certain amount of adult development. And so it's sometimes kind of hard to translate them into people that are in a very, either they're, you know, they're young in age, or they just haven't had experiences in life to help them develop the maturity of thinking. And so in those circumstances, I find coaching, helping coaches that I train to understand that the coaching may seem very slow to them, that you have to give more time and expect that people aren't going to catch on as fast, and that that's okay. So coming from curiosity and an idea of how have people been able to develop.
Thank you, Susan. That's actually, curiosity is my favorite word. My faculty, I drive them crazy. It's like, oh, there she goes again, being curious. But it's true, because I work with children, it's that curiosity that allows them to share things that they would not otherwise share, because they would see it from a place of judgment, or I'm going to get
Absolutely.
In trouble, or you're not
yeah.
going to be happy with me. Now, we do that as adults as well, but at a different level. So being able to open up to curiosity, and going back to your question, Hallie, to be able to find ways to teach our trainees as well as ourselves, what is it that we need to know? And if we don't know it, what is the how can we help our the new coaches be comfortable asking questions that will elicit some solid information? I remember one of our meetings, it might have been Ray, somebody had said something to the effect of, you know, don't tell me what you who you think I am, ask me. And that's, you know, and I don't, to me, it doesn't matter what the age is. I will ask a teenager the same question I'm going to ask a 75-year-old. So I do think it's the way we train, having different new information to add into the competencies, and it's also helping new coaches to trust that their questions are so valuable, to just put them out there without judgment.
I'd like to come now and talk about how, and build on that idea, because I do think that at the core is how the coach views their role. I think having a clarity of what is the role that I'm playing in this interaction, in this relationship, is very important. Am I playing a role? And it could vary over a period of time, but am I an expert? Am I a partner? Am I a co-traveler? What is the role that I'm playing, and why, needs to be answered on an ongoing basis. And secondly, in doing what I'm doing, what am I really doing, which is that how does my worldview interfere with the interaction that I'm coming with? So, you know, whether it is about my understanding of gender differences or my understanding of sexual preferences or gender roles, how is my bias playing a role, and what do I believe my role in this interaction ought to be? I'd say that.
I love that. Like, it's the enhancement of curiosity, because if we're curious, it's only from our lens. We don't know what we don't know. So, yeah.
Yeah, and this, would like to enter in a little, and I apologize, I was a bit late, I couldn't get on right away. But it seems there's a lot of truth being portrayed as I hear everybody speak. Yeah, it really is. Curiosity is so important. And all those basic skills that we not only value as coaches, but we know empower people by seeing them as individuals. And yet, I also think there's a both and here, which without bias, considering not only the context, which someone said before, but the generation, but, and the gender, and the sexual preference, as something tucked away that you can say, this person is talking about these background factors, and I will hold the possibility that some of that has to do with the generation they were brought up in. So that for me, it's a both and, because if I consider them everybody just as people and we're all as common, we can really miss some vitally important aspects that that person is proud of who they are, as well as then feeling missed because it's kind of viewing people with a bland sort of perspective. And I'd also like to reinforce that the lens we carry when we bring in, even at so far as those beliefs, will affect the questions we ask, what we see, the sense we make of that. So these are really profound issues, and I think that we all need to really spend time with ourselves and with others trying to understand what lens we are bringing. So thank you. That is sort of what got stirred up in me as a result of listening to everyone's comments.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Michael Brazel. I guess I'm building on something you said, Holly, a little earlier. I'm really curious how systemic age oppression enters into the conversation about coaching across generations. I think in some ways we can think, or at least it strikes me, that we can think of coaching as a profession that's about coaching by adults to adults. I noticed that there was no mention of elders in this conversation at all. I was delighted about the mention about bullying, ways in which children, young people, and elders are impacted in our societies by oppression, age oppression.
Thank you.
I would love to. I know a coach who specifically coaches people who have retired, and I think it's absolutely a conversation amongst people in elder age group that some people who have chosen not retire, and some people who have not chosen but have retired because their employer has made it impossible for them to continue. And I think age oppression on both ends of the spectrum is a thing for sure. And I would love to have a whole call on age. Let's find some coaches that can speak to that. And I've certainly been a subject of age oppression as a young person, as a young woman. And I think it's absolutely an issue at every end of that spectrum. So
absolutely. And it's always interesting to me the number of people that will come older, people, adults in their, used to be 60s, now it's 70s, close to 80, that are looking for a coach who really gets it. And it has become more, I use the word popular, but I don't mean in a pop way. It's just, there are more coaches available and better training available, which makes me happy because getting again, I'm almost there myself, or just age-wise, but when I think about it, there's a big difference between when I think of millennials, and this is with no disrespect, but for many of an older generation, being coached by a millennial isn't necessarily comfortable. So they're looking for someone who gets it at their level and can understand the struggles of ageism and age oppression on that end. And so it's, and again, Bryce, I'd love if you pushed back at me and said, you know, that I'm totally off. But that's what I noticed from people, you know, when we get calls saying, can you help me find someone who does this, who can help me?
Yeah, well, it's interesting when Michael said age oppression and elderly, and I realized how little contact I have with people that are elderly, two generations removed from me. So, I don't know exactly what you mean by that term, but just when it hit me, it was like, oh, like, I don't think about elderly people. I don't ask them questions because I'm not in contact with them. Therefore, I doubt I understand them well. So I can see there being a divide there that I at least have not bridged.
Thank you.
And therein is the beauty of having a niche in your coaching. Yeah.
I love the breadth of this conversation. And something I learned pre-coach training, I lived in India, and I lived on Indian reservations here in the U.S. And one of the things that I learned early on, and I think it was just by grace, was to be very silent, to move into the space with just being able to present myself in a very vulnerable way that doesn't come with any, I know something, I will do something for you, I will help you, none of that, like take all that off and just come and be. And in that space, what I learned was that their beingness, their heart opened to me, they felt safe and invited me into the deepest part of their lives. I wouldn't have been able to ask the questions, actually. I wouldn't have known them. But they told me what it was that I needed to know in order to serve. And that's what I was there for in those cases. I was there to serve. And so I think that there's something about asking the questions, and everything that's been said is absolutely wonderful. And there's this place of daring to be silent, daring not to know anything, so that where they want to take us can be revealed beyond what our questions could even ask.
Thank you.
Actually, in the method of coaching that I have learned, I've had to co-hold the two methodologies. In my learning or my training, there is no asking questions. So in learning about the ICF coaching methodology, it has been about learning a completely different method of a yoga-based coaching methodology, but something very similar to what Nancy is saying.
And I like what you said, Nancy, and Laura, I'm thinking of you and how you continually remind students how important presence is, and how that's, I think for me, cultivated outside of coaching sessions and then inside them as well. But I really need to be doing my work to be present with people in my life. So that for me, that means having a coach, it means practicing meditation, it means setting intentions prior to sessions. So yeah, I think it's just like, I don't see coaching as a profession as much as it is like a lifestyle. It's like every part of me.
Yeah, thank you. All right, we have about 5 more minutes left. Any other questions or insights that's come from today?
I'm excited about the conference. More of this good stuff.
I was excited to be invited on here, and I noticed I'm probably the youngest one, and I actually felt super nervous and intimidated when I first started talking, and then I was like, okay, like, yeah, I do have something to share, and like, you guys heard me, and I was really interested in what you were talking about. So it's fun to not just talk about it, to actually connect. Different generations here all connecting and sharing thoughts and ideas. Really cool.
Does that mean you're going to be with us in Victoria?
I don't even know what's going on in Victoria.
Oh, Laurel, you better.
I'll share.
Yeah. I will forward
that. I'm glad that Bryce, you said that, because I think I walked in a little tentatively, wondering what I might have to do here, and I quickly scanned to see if I have any similarities in terms of geography, or, you know, people from my experience, the type of part of the world. But I feel very included, and I feel very heard, and I'm very grateful for that. So thank you for having me. I also curious about the organization, so I'd like to know more.
We'll take care of that. One of my many hats with ACTO. But yes. I will say, it's hearing you, Bryce and Bhavna, it does my heart good, because that's how I felt about ACTO 10, 11 years ago, when I walked in with just this tiny continuing ed course and said, I'm not worthy. I'm just coming because somebody said show up at this conference. So it's like, oh, I'll go to Orlando. And it's amazing, because it's like family. Yeah. And it's just that connection is what we all want our students to feel as mm-hmm. coaches, and how we want them to feel when they're training with us, that they can trust us, they can walk in the door and go from, oh my gosh, I know nothing, I'm probably the most ignorant person in the room, to, wow, I have value and I have something to offer. So hearing that from the two of you, just thank you. Mm-hmm. And thank you, Laurel.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you, everyone, for being here, and thank you to our panelists. It's a very rich conversation.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
See you soon. Bye. Bye. Bye.
Next time.